Today is Wednesday, April 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up,
speaking to reporters after talks with Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, European Union President Donald Tusk said China had agreed to address a key sticking point.
That's Lisa Bryant's reporting. We'll have the full story coming up. Also ahead, one day after Israel's elections, it appears that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is headed for a fifth term. And the head of Algeria's upper house of parliament becomes the interim head of state. It's all on today's International Edition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appeared to be in position for a fifth term in power today, as results from a tight parliamentary election showed his Likud party and right-wing allies in the best position to form a coalition government. With 97% of ballots counted, Likud stood even with the centrist Blue and White Party, led by former military chief Benny Gantz. With neither able to win a majority of the Knesset on its own, a coalition will be necessary. Likud and its allies could end up with about 65 seats in the 120-member body. Both sides claimed victory in the hours after the voting ended. In Washington, President Donald Trump called Netanyahu's apparent re-election a good sign for peace in the region. Well, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund praised Egypt's president during his visit to Washington. IMF Chief Christine Lagarde congratulated President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi today for carrying out economic reforms. A spokesman for el-Sisi said Lagarde called on Egypt to continue with the final stages of economic reforms. She said the IMF was interested in maintaining close cooperation with the country. The two met at Blair House in Washington, the presidential guest house. El-Sisi met with President Donald Trump yesterday. The meeting was his second official visit with the president. Today is the final day of El-Sisi's three-day visit to the U.S. Capitol. While European Union leaders attending a summit in Brussels signaled progress yesterday in creating a fairer playing field for trade and investment with China, the stakes are high for both sides. The EU is China's largest trading partner, while China is the EU's second biggest export market after the United States. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
Speaking to reporters after talks with Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, European Union President Donald Tusk said China had agreed to address a key sticking point, concerns about industrial subsidies that critics say give Chinese businesses an unfair advantage.
It is a breakthrough. For the first time, China has agreed to engage with Europe on this key priority for WTO reform.
Premier Li told reporters that China supported fair competition, was committed to working within the framework of the World Trade Organization, and was strongly against industrial espionage. But he also said European companies could expect fair treatment in China.
We will not treat EU companies, especially those registered in China, with discriminatory policy, including solely foreign-owned companies in China. And likewise, Chinese companies should not be discriminated against in their operation in the European Union.
The EU-China summit is an annual meeting. This one, however, came amid heightened tensions over Chinese dominance of key European markets, perceived barriers for European investment in China, and security and privacy concerns regarding Chinese telecommunications company Huawei, which are shared by the United States. The EU is also split over how to deal with China. Last month, Italy became the first G7 member to join China's global Belt and Road infrastructure project. On Thursday, Premier Li holds another meeting in Croatia with Central and Eastern European states. Last month, French President Emmanuel Macron warned that China aimed to deepen European divisions and said the time for naivete was over. Europe has previously accused China of failing to follow talk with action. It may have been reflected in European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker's cautious assessment about this latest meeting.
Today's summit is a big step in the right direction, but commitments are only worth anything if we deliver on them, and that is what we must do in the weeks and months ahead.
The EU and China have also emphasized key areas of agreement, such as fighting climate change and supporting the Iran nuclear deal, which are in opposition to Trump administration policies. For VOA, I'm Lisa Bryant in Paris.
Among the top stories in the world, New Zealand lawmakers passed legislation banning military-style weapons less than 1 month after 50 people were killed in mass shootings at two mosques in the city of Christchurch. Analysts say China may prefer to retain Communist Party influence more than signing a deal and enhancing relations with the U.S. And an international scientific team unveils a landmark achievement in astrophysics, the first photo of a black hole. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. The head of Algeria's upper house of parliament, Abdelkader Ben Salah, became interim head of state yesterday to temporarily replace former President Abdel Aziz Bouteflika, who resigned earlier this month. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Large protests took place in front of the main post office in the Algerian capital, Algiers, and many other towns and cities to protest Tuesday's parliament session, declaring Speaker Abdelkader Ben Salah interim president of the nation for a period of 90 days. Arab news channels showed live video of Algerian security forces using water cannons and tear gas to try and disperse protesters in Algiers. Interim President Ben Salah addressed Parliament after the decision to declare the presidency vacant and to apply Article 108 of the Constitution, granting him interim presidential powers for 90 days. The Constitution also requires that new presidential elections be organized during that 90-day period. Ben Salah told legislators that he was required by national duty to take on the heavy burden of steering a transition that will give the Algerian people the ability to exercise its sovereignty. Ben Salah will have limited powers and may not run for president himself. The Islamist head of Algeria's Justice and Development Party, Abdullah Jabala, told journalists that he does not believe the people will accept Ben Salah as interim president. He says that the people have taken to the streets to get rid of all elements of the Bouteflika regime and that some parties are making efforts to do an end run around the demands of the people. Suleiman Shanain, the head of a major Islamist bloc in parliament, told Al Hora TV that the people reject the decision to appoint Abdelkader Ben Salah as interim head of state and that legislators should have chosen someone else to replace former President Bouteflika. He says that the current crisis is both political and constitutional, so the response must be a mixture of both. Since the people do not accept Ben Salah as president, he claims, the parliament should choose someone else to fill the post of interim head of state. Amr Rakhila, a former member of Algeria's Constitutional Council, however, disagrees. He says that Article 108 of the Constitution is clear. Once Parliament declares the position of President to be vacant, the Speaker of the Upper Chamber automatically becomes interim head of state. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Well, Turkey is arbitrarily jailing hundreds of lawyers, according to a report released today by the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch. The imprisonments are part of an ongoing legal crackdown following the failed 2016 coup attempt. The numbers of lawyers facing prosecutions is far, far higher than any recent era we've seen, said Emma Sinclair Webb, HRW senior Turkey researcher. Turkey is in a very different era in terms of this misuse of criminal charges, she added. Every professional group is targeted in one way or another. However, it's particularly alarming when lawyers lawyers are targeted as well, as they are there to protect you when you are in court. It sends a chilling message to wider society, she says. The 56-page report is called Lawyers on Trial, Abuse of Prosecutions and Erosion of Fair Trial Rights in Turkey. It details how lawyers representing clients accused of terrorism offenses are increasingly becoming targets for prosecution and arbitrary detention. While the UN Children's Fund reports 14 Yemeni children were killed and 16 others were injured by a blast Sunday near two schools in the capital Sana'a, the seat of government for the rebel Houthis. UNICEF says most of the children were under age 9. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Details surrounding the attack remain murky and need to be investigated. UNICEF says the deadly blast occurred shortly before the children were to leave their classrooms for lunch. Witnesses say the explosion shattered the windows and unleashed a burst of shrapnel and broken glass into the classrooms. UNICEF says many of the children are critically injured and fighting for their lives. It says the number of casualties is probably higher than what has been reported. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillard says the blast is another reminder that even schools are not safe in Yemen.
1 in 5 schools can no longer be used as a direct result of the conflict. Some came under direct attack while others are being used for military purposes. For more than 2 million children in Yemen today, going to school is a faraway dream.
UNICEF says this latest attack may further discourage parents from sending their children to school. The Saudi-led coalition began bombing rebel Houthi targets in support of the government 4 years ago. Since then, the United Nations reports more than 2,670 Yemeni children have been killed, mostly by airstrikes. The most horrific attack so far was on a school bus in the rebel-held northern city of Sada last August. A Saudi-led military coalition said it carried out the airstrike that killed 40 children. Bouillard says UNICEF is providing life-saving assistance to affected children and families in Sana'a. He says the agency also is providing psychological support as well as covering the cost of surgery and medical treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
For 6 days, 64 migrants rescued off the coast of Libya have been on board the vessel of the German humanitarian group CI, waiting for Europe to provide a safe port for disembarkation. Officials on board the Alan Kurdi say the situation is increasingly difficult and have voiced their concern over the shortage of drinking water and food supplies. Sabina Castelfranco has more.
The German humanitarian group CI says a solution needs to be found quickly for the migrants on board the Alan Kurdi vessel, as the situation will not be sustainable for much longer. 6 days after 64 migrants were rescued off the coast of Libya, a young woman had to be evacuated Tuesday after she complained of dizziness and faintness. Maltese authorities reacted quickly to the medical emergency and the woman was evacuated to La Valletta. Jan Ribbeck, operations manager of the Alan Kurdi, expects these situations will increase if the migrants aren't allowed to move quickly to a safe place. No EU country has yet come forward offering a safe port. Ribbeck, who is a doctor, said the migrants for the most part had to sleep on deck and were not protected from the weather or the sea water. They were cold, wet and did not have dry clothes to change into. He added that due to the bad weather, they had to be taken below deck. Since Sunday evening, 81 people were huddled together in a room designed for 20 people. Ribbeck said in the last 24 hours alone, one-third of the migrants suffered from seasickness. It leaves me speechless that Europe is not in a position to spare 81 people such ordeals, he said. The rescued migrants have already been through enough suffering, like 30-year-old Benjamin from Nigeria, who says he arrived in Libya in 2015.
Libya is the most terrible country I've seen since I was born. Libya is no good at all. I don't advise any parents to send their children to Libya because it's a very bad country. Libya is not civilized. They use we black for slaves.
Benjamin was sold twice. Others have been tortured or sexually abused. Maltese authorities were informed Tuesday morning about the shortage of water and food and requested some clothing. Malta has allowed a transport to replenish supplies on Wednesday. The European Union, meanwhile, has said that talks are underway with member states to identify a port and countries to take in the migrants. Italy and Malta have refused to allow port access to any NGO rescue ship. CI spokesman Dominic Reisinger said the political situation about the distribution of the rescued overshadows the human rights of those on board. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
A new report finds gender inequality strips women of their ability to control their sexual and reproductive options and limits their right to choose when and if they wish to start a family. The United Nations Population Fund has released this year's State of the World Population Report titled Unfinished Business, The Pursuit of Rights and Choices for All. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Big gains have been made in reproductive rights over the past 50 years when the United Nations Population Fund was created. The number of births per woman has dropped by nearly half to 2.5 births. There's been a significant decrease in fertility rates in the least developed countries, as well as deaths from pregnancy-related causes. But the UNFPA reports more than 200 million women are subjected to unwanted pregnancies because they have no access to modern contraceptives. It says more than 800 women die every day from preventable causes during pregnancy and childbirth because many are unable to access reproductive health services. Director of UNFPA in Geneva, Monica Ferro, says gender inequality is the obstacle that underpins all others. She says gender unequal norms and attitudes are often used to control women's sexuality and reproduction.
Gender inequality limits the ability of women to freely make fundamental decisions about when and with whom to have sex, about the use of contraception or health care, and about whether and when to seek employment or whether to seek higher education.
The report says hundreds of millions of women worldwide are being left behind, unable to enjoy their rights to sexual and reproductive health. It says these women and girls typically are poorer, rural, and less educated. It says two-thirds of maternal deaths today occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Ferro tells VOA women fare best in countries that have invested most in gender equality policies and programs. Most of these countries are in the developed world.
If you look at the countries who are the most challenged ones, it's countries where women still face many barriers in accessing health, in accessing especially sexual reproductive health and rights. And this has to do also with specific challenges, be it specific economic crises, shortfalls.
The UNFPA has set itself several ambitious goals, timed to meet the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. These include the elimination of preventable maternal deaths, creating universal access to family planning, and achieving zero tolerance for violent and abusive practices that harm women and girls. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In response to a measles outbreak in an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, New York City officials declared a health emergency. Mayor Bill de Blasio said unvaccinated people living, working, or going to school in four postal code areas in Brooklyn's Williamsburg section will be required to get the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, known as MMR, to curtail the outbreak and protect others. Those who refuse to be vaccinated or cannot provide proof of having received a vaccine could face a $1,000 fine. Well, a new report finds more than 175 million children, half of the world's children aged 3 to 6, get off to a bad start in life because they miss out on a primary school education. Here's Lisa Schlein again in Geneva.
Studies show an early education really matters. They find young children who receive a pre-primary education get a head start in developing the skills critical for future success. Evidence indicates that early learning is critical for brain development and for setting children on the right educational path. Author of the report, Evelina Borisova, tells VOA, children who have experience with preschool education are twice as likely to be on track developmentally and ready for school when they enter first grade.
They're much more likely to not drop out in the early grades of school, to complete primary education on time. And even more importantly, with big global learning crisis that we're facing, they actually are more likely to gain literacy and math skills that are absolutely critical for them to actually be successful in their adulthood as well.
The report presents a bleak picture of the situation in poor countries, where only one in five young children access pre-primary education, compared to four in five in wealthy countries. Borisova says UNICEF's analysis of the data show sub-Saharan Africa is farthest behind. The situation is particularly critical in West and Central Africa, with 70% of children missing out on early education.
All of the kind of sub-regions within Africa are behind at the moment, and that's where support is needed and momentum is needed to really push the needle on that. Not surprisingly, these are also the regions that are struggling in terms of learning and education outcomes more broadly. So these are education systems that could really benefit from this early investment.
The report notes all regions in the world have made progress in providing pre-primary education in the last 15 years. But progress in Africa and the Middle East is very slow, whereas South Asia is doing somewhat better. The highest achievers, it says, are regions in Latin America and the Caribbean, Eastern and Central Europe, which are approaching universal education. UNICEF is urging governments to make at least 1 year of quality pre-primary education universal. It says governments should allocate at least 10% of their national education budgets to early childhood learning. It notes this investment today will pay big dividends tomorrow by creating a workforce that can more successfully compete in the global economy. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you've been listening to VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Rob McLean. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America. Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA1, the voice of America.